Welcome back to Highly Respected. I'm your host, Scott Greer. Today, we're joined by Steve Franson, a world-famous YouTuber and political analyst. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well, Scott. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, and we actually have a little bit of a funny story with this podcast. We had a terrific conversation, and it was mind-blowing takes. But unfortunately, the recording got deleted. So this is a second go around. So we're hoping that this conversation is just as good as the first. So the big topic we're going to talk about today, as all listeners should know, is last night's presidential debate. Trump showed a different side this time. He showed himself not interrupting, a more moderate tone. He was not trying to call Biden, saying Biden should be in jail. He was interacting nicely with the moderator. Most people were complimenting on this. But Steve, what did you think of the debate and how did you think of Trump's performance and Biden's performance?
Well, I thought the debate was on a technical side, it was a victory for Trump. I mean, he appeared a lot more presidential. Moderates and undecideds were asked what their keyword impressions were of each candidate through their debate performances. And Trump's came up more like coherent, put together, competent, a con artist, higher energy. And then Biden was characterized as old and feeble and incoherent. And I think that people could really see, even the average voter who maybe doesn't dig so far deep into the issues and has like a strong political framework from which to base their decisions off of, I think they could see the energy difference. And clearly, Biden was flagging in energy about 30, 40 minutes into this thing, and the moderator was picking that up for him. His gaffes started to increase in frequency. And so Trump really shone through. You know, Biden was calling the Proud Boys poor boys. He had this terribly awkward moment where Trump was saying, well, why didn't you get anything done in 47 years? And he just said, because Republicans... in Congress.
Yeah, the Republican Congress. He just said the Republican Congress, and then there's like a few seconds of awkward silence, and he's like, that's it, the Republican Congress. He's like, yeah. And of course, they're saying his comments about the poor boys, which I guess that's the hobo offshoot of the Proud Boys. They're living under underpasses. They're not necessarily wearing Fred Perry polos. They're just wearing a blanket over themselves. That's their uniform. Plus a MAGA hat with like grease stains and oil stains all over it. So we support our poor boys. They're standing by and standing back right now. I guess Trump will activate them at the election time if he needs them. But he loves his homeless supporters, especially those who are poor boys. I think I'd agree is that Biden's performance was definitely weak, is flagging. And this is any time that Biden is up there. It's like he has enough energy and confidence to go through. And for 30, 40 minutes, he is terrific. He's got all his lines that he's rehearsed and practiced countless times. He goes up there. He's got his talking points. And he goes in. And then he knows what to say. But he was definitely off his point. And as near the end, I think this is one of the final questions, is that he said, I want to eliminate the oil industry, which when he said that, Trump was so excited. He was like a little kid seeing that he's getting it, that he found out where his parents were hiding the Christmas presents that year. He's like, oh, yeah, I know. I'm going to get to see my presents early, because he knows that that's going to help him in the election, because the whole debate and this whole election, Biden said, oh, I don't oppose fracking. I don't want to end fracking. And then he goes up there, and even in debate, he's like, I've never said that. That's fake news that I said I want to ban fracking. And he's like, I want to end the oil industry. Well, banning, I don't know how you're not banning fracking, but keeping the oil industry alive just goes to show what's going on in Biden's head. Yeah, I don't think, and none of these people were really praising Biden, is that I watched the CNN live stream, and at the end of it, they had Jake Tapper come on with his nasally voice, and he's like, well, I guess Trump did a good job, and, you know, but his lies were worse than Pinocchio, but even that grudging admission, that Trump did a good job is a sign that he won the debate. Whether it's going to be the decisive factor, I don't know if that's the case. I mean, I think it's almost like 50 million Americans have already voted, more, it's around that number. I don't know if the debates are really going to matter. But the real takeaway is that Biden says, I want to end the oil industry. And if there's undecisive voters in Pennsylvania, Texas, you know, Ohio, you know, Florida, you know, they're going to hear that and be like, I'm not going to vote for that guy because that guy's going to wreck our entire industry and is going to destroy our economy. And he has no real plan what is he replacing it with? There's no alternative.
Yeah, there's no alternative. And people need the jobs. You know, they got hammered by coronavirus. And so they need the money right now. And that's, I mean, this gaffe is just, it's inexcusable for Biden. It probably shifted 100, 200,000 votes to Trump if we're talking, you know, optimistically. And it just shows Biden just how out of touch he is. You know, he's not a jobs creator. He had 47 years to deliver on these things. And Trump rightly pounced on this point. And Biden just had nothing. He couldn't come back with anything. He doesn't know how to create value. He knows how to like grift and he knows how to steal. And I think that that is like so well modeled in what's happened with Hunter Biden. Is that Hunter Biden was a loser. He got kicked out of the military for being a cokehead. You know, he's like begging daddy to get him jobs, get him connections. And then all this stuff happens. This is who Joe Biden raised, you know, so it's very reflective of who Joe Biden is in his character. And we're even seeing, you know, I just saw in this recording that we did before, you mentioned this TikTok that went viral, this girl, this green haired girl. She said, you know, she's
with problem glasses, no less.
Yeah. And she sits there in her car and she says, I just voted for Trump. You know, I voted for the first time and I voted Republican. And I think that there's going to be a lot of people like that. A lot of people are being won over to Trumpism. They're seeing that he really isn't the racist that everyone is painting him out to be. You know, he addressed that last night yet again, but I think in a new way that he hadn't quite done before. They're seeing that he is not a madman that has got his thumb over the big red button and he's going to send us all to oblivion. I think they're seeing that really Trump translates in very real terms to dollars and cents for the American worker. I wish that he would use that term a little bit more often. I wish he would talk about the American worker more often. You know, he's willing to sort of get pulled into whatever question is put to him by the moderator or, you know, whatever is presented to him by the media. He sort of will go and run with that. But he is proactive at times. And he certainly was very proactive last night in the optics and definitely in that moment where Biden said that we would transition away from fossil fuels. He scored a near home run on that. I think that was probably his strongest moment in the debate.
Yeah, exactly. I think when it comes to the economy, you know, Trump does outperform Biden because Biden wants to raise taxes. He wants to end the oil industry. He wants to implement a truncated version of the Green New Deal, which is not really has anything to do with the helping the environment. It's just a racial wealth redistribution scheme mm-hmm. that's going to give it's going to help blacks run wind turbines and somehow that's going to help the environment. And they're getting all these subsidies. Meanwhile, if you're a working class white person who's working who depends on an oil rig as your employment, well, you're going to just have to find something else. Meanwhile, like the solar panels are being run by Black Lives Matter, I assume. So that's his plan under the Obama or rather the Biden Green New Deal plan. And this is what he plans for the economy. So, yeah, when it comes to the economy, Trump is clearly winning on that issue. And bringing up Hunter Biden, you know, that was not really a major part of the debate. It's like going in, you thought that Trump was going to go guns blazing, just bring up Hunter Biden. He was even potentially going to call Hunter Biden a pedophile, depending on based on what some of these leaked texts and emails that are coming out from the hard drive. But he didn't. He was very restrained. He didn't even want to say Hunter Biden in the thing. He kept saying that, like, you benefited from these deals. You were making millions from your family. Your family, you were taking a 10% cut from your family. You're the big man. They said all the 10% has to go to the big man. I assume yeah. You're the big man. Maybe it's somebody else. Who else it could be is a real mystery. So there's all this evidence. And then Biden's like, oh, that's just not true. This is fake. You're paid by Russia and China, not me. My family has nothing to do with it. Somehow Hunter Biden gets these make work contracts that require him not to do anything, just sit on a board. And somehow is capable of making millions of dollars a year despite having a serious crack and methamphetamine addiction and having no real relevant job experience. But maybe it's something to do with his last name. Who knows? It could be a Russian disinformation to even suggest that.
Or Iranian disinformation.
Iranian disinformation, that's true. That came up in that Russia and Iran are trying to steal the election for Trump, which makes Iran makes no sense because, I mean, Trump is punishing sanctions on Iran right now. Killed Soleimani in January. He's saber-rattling against Iran all the time.
Yeah, he said we do things to them that have never been done before. So
yeah, I think Iran would rather have any person besides Trump. But somehow they're trying to steal the election, and it's like they have access to voter registration files. It's like, so do a lot of people. Like, I mean, It's pretty easy to obtain voter registration files. And like, what are they doing with this? But we exist in a permanent state of Russian hysteria. We think that Putin is under every mattress trying to steal the election, and that. We have to deal with this matter, and that anytime that something bad happens for Democrats, they can just say it's Russian disinformation, as these supposed 50 intelligence officials who came out and said, this Hunter Biden hard drive has all the markings of a Russian disinformation campaign. Even though the hard drive exists, it comes from a humble computer repair shop that has no connection to Vladimir Putin or Russia. And he just gave this over to them because he was never paid to repair these computers. But yeah, this is all Russian disinformation, because anything that bad can happen could just be blamed on the Kremlin. Seeing this now as a new technique for Democrats, is that any story they don't want to address, they just say it's Russian disinformation.
Right. Yeah, they do. And, it's just like, it's very pathetic and very trite at this point. And Biden's response was, well, you're paid by China, you made China money. And the coherence and the clarity by which Trump answered this allegation from Biden, look, I wanted to make a deal, we opened a bank account, I didn't want to make the deal, and so we closed the bank account, and all of this has been disclosed, it's just a very different approach than Biden has had, whereas Biden just put a lid on the campaign. We're going to put a lid. Oh, he's spending 5 days on debate prep. He's not been seen for 5 days, to where people don't show up anyway. People can really see that the wheels are falling off for Biden. I mean, they also saw with this thing with Obama. Obama's like giving a live stream speech, and he can only pull 5,000 people concurrently, 25,000 total. You compare that to like the numbers that Nick Fuentes has pulled in the last couple months. He's pulling 35,000 people concurrent. We know that a reasonable estimate would be 50 or 60,000 people total on that. You look at Trump rallies, you'll have 70,000 people there waiting in the ABC. It's not even the Fox queue. They're waiting there, waiting for Trump to speak. So Trump is a total rock star. Biden has no leg to stand on. He is being propped up by big tech and by the media. And really, it is Trump against the media, and it's Trump against big tech. And it's been evidenced by Trump having to debate. He goes into this interview with Leslie Stahl, and it's an interrogation. And she's like at one point like trying to cry and pretending that she's been really hurt and harassed. That doesn't work. She pivots back to her vitriol a second later. So he is fighting really this election. It's not so much that he's fighting Biden. He really is fighting big tech, and he's fighting the media. And they did everything they could to suppress this Biden story. They're doing everything they can to prop up this corpse of a man. Biden should be laid out to pasture. He should be writing his memoirs right now. He should be at, some lake house or something like this, chilling and relaxing and letting the last year of years of his life. He may not have very long anyway, if he's on as much drugs as is rumored. These personal assistants that he has like running around Philadelphia picking up dementia drugs for him. If he's on that much stuff where he can't show up for anything in the 5 days prior to the debate, this guy really may only have under a couple of years to live. So Trump is really fighting a media establishment, a finance class, a financier class, and not really fighting Biden at this point. I mean, Trump won so hard last night on energy. I think, his internals are looking good. I think Minnesota is in play. He's doing new ad buys in Minnesota. So he is just looking like a conqueror right now. And Biden is just what the media can do. It's just what they can do for him, which is and the celebrities. And it's just not much at this point.
Yeah, that's true. And you go back on your tech, big tech going up against Trump, is that I said in this in the previous recording, is that this is not necessarily them showing their liberal inherent liberal bias. And like, yes, big tech is leans to the left, to say it mildly. But they're ultimately a business, and they don't want to upset the president, or they used to not want to upset the president or half the country, and they always want to pretend that they're objective and neutral. And in a lot of cases, they could have censored a lot more in the last 4 years if they totally listened to or completely capitulated to journalist demands. Right. But they've slowly and slowly lost every battle with journalist demand that this person be censored or this group of people be censored, and they resist and they resist, and then eventually they cave. And right now there's such an extreme censorship and suppression of things that are damaging to Biden or helpful to Trump, and it's all done to please Biden, not necessarily because they want Biden to win, even though a lot of them do, obviously, but because they fear Biden. Biden says he's going to revoke Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. Some people know what the Section 230 is, but it grants publisher immunities to these tech platforms on the basis that they're not really publishers. That if you post something there that's libelous, Twitter is not going to be sued for it. That's if they were able to be sued for that, they could not exist as a business model because they would have to spend all their time censoring every tweet to make sure it wasn't libel or it was in, it was totally free from any possible litigation they may have. If they got rid of Section 230, the whole business model would fall. We would not have Facebook and Twitter that we have now. Actually, the censorship would get far worse. Some people want to revoke Section 230. It's useful as a threat. Really, what you need to do is revise it to specifically protect political speech, which a couple of bills, Paul Gosar has a bill, Josh Hawley has a bill similar, and even what Trump sent over in his executive order to the FCC, you know, that's the aim that they want to do there. But Biden wants to eliminate it entirely because he wants to turn them into publishers that are dutifully liberal. They only allow liberal content, and they're totally up for the status quo. And that's how they're going to exist. And it's very much a huge change from the Obama years, where Obama credited social media for both his win in 2008 and 2012. And they credited Twitter for the wonderful Arab Spring that happened in 2010 and 2011. They're like, oh, Twitter and Facebook are bringing democracy throughout the world. And now they want to end Facebook and Twitter because, well, in fact, it's bringing democracy to the West. And so that can't be tolerated. We can only have people sharing democratic messages in Egypt or Turkey or Iran. It can't happen in the United States or France or Germany. And that's the new scenario. So they're trying to do this censorship to show that we're on the team, Joe. Please don't take away our Section 230. We did such a good job in 2020. We made sure that Trump couldn't win. Please don't punish us. And I don't know if it necessarily would work, but I think they're screwed either way. If you know Biden wins, he's still going to revoke it. And if Trump wins, he's now going to have the political capital and energy to really take on big tech to ensure that they're going to protect political speech and to launch more antitrust investigations into them, as we saw this week when the Department of Justice announced a new antitrust lawsuit against Google. So you're going to see more of that. So that's the matter on tech censorship. Besides the economy, Trump did really well on foreign policy. Biden tried to hit him hard. Is like, you're not going to war against North Korea. You're not being hard enough on Russia and all these dictators. You buddy up to dictators. That's outrageous. Thinking that, you know, every American president, we have to make sure that they're a good little Democrat before we have anything to do with them, which we've never operated before at any time in history. We've always tried to make sure that these, you know, we're out there to serve our own interests. It's not about spreading democracy around the world. And we've seen the disasters of that mentality in the Obama and Bush years of just trying to spread democracy throughout the world. So Trump is a different, you know, a different orientation on that matter. And he was saying that in specifically when it came to North Korea, he's like, I have a good relationship with Kim Jong-un. And you know what that's resulted in? No war. When I came into the office, Obama told me we're going to have a war in North Korea. But guess what? No war. And that's an appealing message. I don't think the message that Biden wants to get across that we want war is what they want. But Biden wants to present himself as the hawkish president who's going to bring back neoconservatism and spread war all over the world. I think Trump presents himself as the peace candidate who's going to keep our troops home, isn't going to put them in harm's way, and is trying to draw them down from Afghanistan, Syria, and Iraq, but the deep state is trying to keep them there. And military-industrial complex, of course, wants a new war, but he's saying no new war. And this comes about from having good relationships with otherwise bad people like Kim Jong-un.
Right. And what Biden wants and what he's saying, you know, what he was saying in the debate last night is like, we need to be with our allies on this. Okay. You know, which doesn't amount to much other than like, we need to get back to Barack Obama's foreign policy of, you know, destabilizing countries, doing color revolutions and cozying up with the EU. You know, that's like the extent of Biden's foreign policy articulation and what we can really expect from him. Whereas Trump has tangible gains that he's showing almost every single day now. Look, we've got a new peace deal here. Look, we've got a new peace deal here. And, you know, we arranged, we see those migrant caravans that were coming. Oh, yeah, we arranged it so they wouldn't come anymore. So he has tangible things that he can show the American voter, like, look, I've done really well in this regard. Look, you were right to say, you know, we were on the precipice of war with North Korea. Look, now that has been neutralized. I mean, the South Korean people love Trump. They're not quite yet at a majority of loving him, but it's like 46 or 47%. They're very close. Whereas I don't think they would have been friendly to a Republican president, you know, otherwise, like Romney or McCain or something like this. People are coming around, and there's a Trumpian consensus being built because he really is showing tangible gains in foreign policy. And Biden has nothing to show for it. He has like the ruins of Syria to show for it, the ruins of Ukraine and what it's become, and like some appeal to democracy in Belarus. He just has no leg to stand on in foreign policy. So on that and on energy, Trump just handing him his ass. Now, my one sort of critique or my point of criticism with Trump last night is that he continues to be weak on the healthcare answer. For a guy that is so articulate in every other regard, when it comes to healthcare, he says, look, we did the best thing. We got rid of the worst thing with Obamacare, which was the individual mandate. And we're going to come up with something cheaper. And it's going to be great. You're going to love it. And we're not going to lose pre-existing. And that's as far as it goes. For me, this seems like Biden's court packing issue. It's like, Trump, what are you actually going to do? Like, you know, we can believe him at his word that he's not going to take away the coverage for pre-existing. But like, what are you going to do beyond that? And the left has captured healthcare culturally. They did such a number. I mean, it's like the same with gay marriage. They've really won on gay marriage for now anyway. And we'll see. There might be a reckoning, but and they've really won on healthcare. The idea that America should have, well, it's, you know, it's like Scandinavia. We could be like them. They've won on this healthcare issue. And so Trump is right to be careful, but I just wish he would be more articulate. And what he did with Leslie Stahl when she pressed him on this issue was he gave her a big book on what the Republicans had written up about healthcare. And she held it, and it was a nice photo op. He obviously wasn't able to do that with Biden. And so I think that he came across a little flat and a little, like, you know, inarticulate in regards to healthcare. That's my point of criticism on the debate.
Yeah, the other point of criticism is that he was relatively weak on immigration and race, is that when immigration came up, I mean, it's been ignored in the past two debates, the presidential and vice presidential, and it finally came up. And of course, the issue centered entirely around family separation, all these poor kids, you know, who just came with their loving family from Honduras. And there is no drug cartel or coyotes taking them across the border. They just came with their family. And then the evil white supremacists, ICE and Border Patrol, separated them and laughed. And they put them in cages that had just been erected by Trump and Stephen Miller, by hand, no less. And this is what's happening. And there's these over 500 migrant minors that they can't find their parents, which more goes to show is like, why are the parents not going to their embassies and consulates to say, hey, where are my kids? They're still in custody. I mean, their parents just, I guess, forgot about them and they're leaving them in America.
Yeah.
Which that's a real something to worry about. But when Trump was said this and Biden endorsed specifically giving a pathway to citizenship to 11 million illegal immigrants. And when Trump was told that, he just said that, like, who built the cages? Who built the cages? He did, however, warn about the dangers of illegal immigration. He was saying that there's drug cartels, there's rape, there's all these terrible things that are happening in the border, and they're being guided by these coyotes who don't have their best, these immigrants' interests at heart. They don't really care about this. But a lot of Twitter users thought he meant actual coyotes and the animal, that they were dragging them across the border. Terrible. And there were some real intelligent people, such as Darshan Kendrick, who is a corporate attorney and Georgia state representative, who said, did real Donald Trump just say 545 kids they can't find their parents for came over through cartels and coyotes? How the hell does a coyote bring a whole human across the border? No, stop talking. And of course, these brainiacs kept going on. There was Jemele Hill, who's considered the smartest woman in sports journalism, who also thought he was referring to actual coyotes. And there's a Twitter user that I tweeted out who found dozens of other blue check marks, many of them with PhDs in their name, who thought that he was talking about actual coyotes, which it's either willful ignorance that they know what a coyote means. They're just trying to think that Trump is stupid and he referred to an animal, or they're actually that ignorant of immigration policy that they have this myth that it's all these just loving families who are ready to go and start their own business or cure cancer, and they're just coming from dangerous Honduras and Guatemala, which are just so dangerous, but they're, don't you dare call them shitholes, they're actually great countries. They're so great that people have to flee there and just die living there, that's a cause for asylum, but they're also great countries at the same time. Don't ask to reconcile these differences. And so they believe that these just families go on their own and no one's guiding them and no one's helping them along the path. They just use their iPhone and they somehow find the holes in the wall or the weaknesses in the barrier, and they get across and they're like, we're here to make America better because all these evil white people destroy America and don't want to work while we want to work and cure cancer. And this is the popular mythology that they have. And none of these people are going to have to suffer any consequences. I'm sure this Darshan Kendrick and Jemele Hill are going to double down and think that he was actually talking about coyotes. And if they actually have to face the fact on coyote, they'll just say it's a racist term. David Hogg was saying it's a racist term and said that coyotes are just their parents, which I think a lot of these migrant children who are getting raped by coyotes and all the women are getting preyed on. I mean, if you look at the stats on the matter, it's roughly half of my women who come through the border are sexually assaulted by these coyotes and other migrants. And I'm pretty sure they would find it news to learn that their coyote who abused them and threatened them for more money is actually their parent. But this is the popular mythology that, you know, ordinary liberals don't understand. And going on race is that Trump was told, you know, Biden was saying that he's a racist. He's encouraging these white supremacists like the Poor Boys, and he's so bad for blacks. And Trump just went on about saying the black unemployment rate. He's doing so much for historically black colleges and universities. He did criminal justice reform. Obama and Biden couldn't do that. And he's just like, oh, come on, man. But at the same time, the main point wasn't necessarily to drive home populist talking points to us. We're already on board.
Right.
It was to show that he's moderate. The one thing he could have done on immigration that he should have done is that he should have brought up his immigration moratorium, which he first introduced in the spring, and then he expanded and extended in the summer, which protected over 500,000 American jobs from foreign competition. He should have brought it up and demanded Biden answer on it or whether he supported it. And Biden, of course, can't support because the left is so far left on immigration that they always have to side with the foreigner against the American worker. So he would have heard, he would have brought up this topic, said, I'm protecting American workers from cheap labor and greedy corporations. And Biden is on the side of greedy corporations and foreign labor. And Biden would have sat there awkwardly going, poor boys. And then he would have had no real answer. He would have just said that it's white supremacist to do a immigration moratorium that protects Americans of all races and colors and creeds. And that would have been his answer. And that would have just shown, that would have been just as important as the oil industry comment that Biden made. It would have shown that Trump's on the side of the American worker while Biden is on the side of Wall Street, greedy corporations, and cheap foreign labor that comes here either illegally or legally to take American jobs.
Yeah, I think he could have pressed him on this issue. And you know, people need to know that Biden is an immigration extremist. I mean, his first day in office, he would sign in, who knows, 11 million illegals into citizenship. So there would be mass amnesties. The borders would be flung wide open. And in the last debate, immigration wasn't touched upon. It was only briefly touched upon here in the second debate. And it is a position that that Biden is absolutely toxic on, that the media has successfully memory holed people on. It's just like not something you think about when you think about Biden. And people need to, the scrutiny needs to be sort of like that. The scrutinizing eye of the right needs to be cast upon this for Biden, because Trump has been a total victory for the American worker on immigration. And immigration is down 92%, I think, in the second half of 2020. That's going to continue. And what do they have to stand on politically if they get blown out in the president, or even if they lose, you know, by a close margin in the presidential election? They just have coronavirus to keep pushing, or like Russia to keep pushing. They've already impeached the president. They don't have much to stand on. And so it would be like a real merciless kill if he could just get them on immigration. But I agree with your criticism there. I got to jump out of here. I got to go do some family stuff, but thanks for having me on, Scott.
That's great to have you on, Steve. Sorry that we have to see you go, but we have a little bit more of the topic. So Steve, follow him on Telegram and YouTube. He's been banned from Twitter. So try to find him on there. Just type in Steve Franz and he should come up. So thanks again for coming on, Steve.
Very cool. Thanks for having me, Scott.
Thank you. And now going on to other topics, the last one I have to talk about is with the debate is that the other great atrocity that happened at this debate was Trump calling AOC AOC. He's not supposed to do that. He's got to call her congresswoman or representative. Whether he has to call her congresswoman AOC or congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez wasn't made clear. But once again, AOC complained about this on Twitter and it got hundreds of thousands of likes. And the point is that I demand to be called by my title. And for all of her populist bluster and saying she stands with ordinary people, AOC is kind of an elitist. One of her main things in Congress is that she demands that representatives need more higher pay and that she can't afford to live in D.C. on a $175,000 a year salary, which, you know, that's much, much higher than the ordinary salary. I think that's at least 3 or 4 times higher than the average American salary. And she's complaining about it. And at the same time, she demands to be called by her proper title. It's like, I am not AOC. I am Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, and you must call me that, as she has AOC as her Twitter handle. And, you know, she claims that the people can call me that, but all of my colleagues must call her that. And, well, President Trump isn't necessarily her colleague. He's, you know, the president of the United States. He's not in the House. He doesn't need to worry about presenting himself as respectful. And it's pretty egregious to demand a level of respect from somebody you call a racist, a white supremacist, and a terrible human being on a daily basis. But you insist that they respect you while you don't respect them. I don't think she called and make sure to call Trump, President Trump, anytime she talks about him. But this is more of an indication that Ocasio-Cortez is less like ordinary Hispanics and more like affluent white female liberals. Awfuls love these titles and credentials that they must always be called by. You don't dare call them Mrs. Smith. You must call them Dr. Smith, even though they got a PhD in women's studies. You have to always call them that. And they'll go to a supermarket and they have their order read. And it's like, sandwich for Mrs. Smith. Like, excuse me, that's Dr. Smith. And it's like, why does this person need to know that? But that's the type of arrogance they have, and that everyone has to show this undue respect for their credentials. And this extends to a lot of people. There's a certain person on the right, you may have heard of him, Sebastian Gorka, who always insists on being called Dr. Gorka. I mean, it's even in his Twitter handle. And I can only imagine him going to a store and he's got an order and, you know, they call him Mr. Gorka. He's like, excuse me, it's Dr. Gorka. And it's the same thing that goes with AOC. It's something that's an obsession with credentials. They must always be validated for this little special thing they got, whether it's being a congresswoman or having a master's degree. They always have to be acknowledged for this achievement because those credentials make them superior than the hoi polloi, and they demand respect. So I think this is, once again, that AOC, it's ignore AOC's, you know, supposedly radical comments about taking down billionaires and spreading the wealth, is that you can really understand her by how upset she gets by not being referred to congresswoman. Is that this is all about climbing the social ladder and being seen for the credentials you have. And, you know, at the end of the day, she's not really an authentic working class Latina. She's just an awful. So with that, you know, we had a couple of other topics that we went through that didn't get recorded, but, you know, we're a little pressed for time. So I'm just going to go into the reader, or rather the patron questions from highly respected Patreon. As a reminder, you too can get the power to ask me and the guests, if we don't have any errors like we did this week, the power to ask us questions about any topics you want. And this week we've got a question from Dave. He asks, a lot of Republicans like Ben Sasse are starting to ditch Trump ahead of the election. Do you think this is a sign that GOP is ready to turn on nationalism? And what do you think of Trump's election chances? Well, clearly the GOP wants to get, or the establishment rather, want to get rid of Trump and just pretend that this was all a bad dream, that they can get back to the Paul Ryan agenda and they can just, everything's an ordinary business. Like, you know, the Republican base will come out and turn out for them if they just focus on tax cuts and the deficit and helping out, you know, Israel and going to war with Iran, is that this is the real stuff that really matters. And ordinary middle Americans just want more immigration. They want to be replaced by cheap foreign labor. They want their communities to turn into little Mogadishu. And this is what they really believe. So they want to get rid of Trump, but they are not going to be able to. There is such a strong tie between the base and Trump that there is no possibility that they can just become, that they can win in 2024, which Ben Sasse and Larry Hogan and a lot of other people want to do, by presenting themselves as the anti-Trump candidate. The presidential candidate in 2024, no matter what happens between now and then, will have to have a Trump endorsement. I guarantee that. If I tweeted this out, I would say screenshot this. But I don't know if any of us will be allowed on Twitter anymore, so maybe you won't have that option anymore. But they will have to have Trump's endorsement. You cannot exist in a post-Trump party by being fervently anti-Trump. You're going to have to appeal to him. You're going to have to appeal to his base because there is a strong tie between them and Trump. Trump has 94% approval rating among Republicans. That's the highest it's ever been. That's just not going to go away overnight if he loses. Even if he loses in a blowout, they're still going to have the strong tie to him. They're still going to like him. He's still the first Republican president they've had in a while since George W. Bush. And George W. Bush has lost a lot of his appeal to the ordinary Republicans. They're going to replace that with Trump. And I think even in some respects, you know, they're going to look on Trump as a lot of boomers look on Reagan. Well, actually, a lot of boomers love Trump, but a lot of the people who grew up in the 80s looked on Reagan, and that's going to be the case for the next 10 or 20 years, and they cannot extricate themselves from Trumpism. And nationalism is appealing to the base. They like trade protectionism. They like immigration restrictionism. They want a country that stays out of these stupid foreign wars. They don't want a nation built and spread democracy around the world. So I think it's stupid, but it's clearly a political move. They think he's going to lose, just like all the journalists. And they now think that they can just shrug him off and build their political future by being an anti-Trump candidate. But it's not going to work for them or for any of the Republican establishment who encourages them. Now, under Trump's chances, you know, of course, the polls, national polls don't look that good. But if you look at the state polls, much better. I mean, in a lot of these state polls, and especially the Real Clear Politics average, you'll see that there's less than 5-point difference between Biden and Trump. The registrations in a lot of these battleground states, is particularly in the Rust Belt, there's a greater number of new Republican voter registrations than there are for new Democratic voter registrations. A lot of the early voting is not going as well for the Democrats as they expected. Of course, there's a huge early voting turnout, but they're not winning by the margins that the polls told them would. It's a much lower difference. And you just have to see from the energy level. I mean, you see these rallies that Obama or Biden is using Obama for, is that this week you saw Obama yelling at like 12 disinterested people with a bullhorn. And you're just like, this is so pathetic and so embarrassing for somebody, you know, less than 10 years ago was seen as the great Messiah who could, you know, really inspire a crowd like nobody else. And everyone said he's the greatest orator in generations. And now he's reduced to standing on a sidewalk yelling at 12 people in masks with a bullhorn. And he's got a mask on himself. It's very embarrassing. They also have these car rallies where it's like 100 liberals with masks on in their car honking their horns at Biden as he's increasingly yelling and stumbling over his teleprompter. It's all bad optics. So, yes, national polls aren't looking good, but I think Trump's chances are still pretty good. I would give him 50-50 shot. And a lot of people out there who just want to be blackpilled all the time and say, he's done, he's lost, this is so bad, and they get upset about anything Trump does. And you even saw this last night with the debate where they were just not liking his answers. And they're just such a wave of negativity. And like, don't be like that. Don't be a doomer. Think positively. Trump is always on the power of positive thinking. And even if he's losing, if he loses and you're right, what do you gain? You're like, ah, I was right. You all knew it. And like, compliment me. It's like, congrats. You get some Twitter likes. Great. Congratulations. Your country's destroyed. You should think, people need to think positively. Even if he does lose, people need to keep him positive mentality on this. I really don't like this negative thinking and doomer mentality. People should be realistic. They shouldn't be saying like, he's got this in the bag, he's guaranteed. But the chances are much better than the journalist class is giving him. Don't necessarily rely entirely on the national polls. There's a lot of other variables out there. And he's got a 50-50 shot. So don't give up on him now. Do not be like the cucks. Do not be like Ben Sasse. Do not be like the doomers who want to have their little compliment at the end or their little validation that they're right all along. You should have listened to me. Listen to me. And it's like, wow, yeah, you get your little Twitter like, nothing else accomplishes. No one's going to remember your grand prediction. Wow, you had the same prediction as the journalist class. Congrats. This is real clairvoyancy we're seeing. So that's my take on it. And that is all the time we have for Highly Respected this week. So we're actually going to have an episode on Monday. We should. And it's going to be with a very special guest. And we're going to be talking about the anti-woke left. And I think we're going to have a second episode next week. So tune in then. And until next time, stay respected.